right? We got a lot of different things coming at you today, okay? And I'm just sensing a little bit of a lull right now. That. We don't got time for that, all right? Let's go. Crank it. Let it cross. Woo!
Ladies and gentlemen, can I please have your attention? I've just been handed an urgent and horrifying news story. And I need all of you to stop what you're doing and listen.
You're listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
Hey, what's happening? Welcome in Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I am Nick Schwert with Derek Johnson. Happy to have you with us on a lovely Thursday afternoon. We've got a lot to get to today. Benton Smith at 325. John Costco coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. We're going to qualify another listener for the What's Your Number giveaway brought to you by the Kansas Speedway for those NASCAR races coming to Kansas City next month. We've got a Hog Wild giveaway to do as well. Somebody's getting free lunch. We're giving away free lunch like every single day. So if you've come hungry, you've come to the right place. All that before 6 o'clock. And it seems weird. What? Go ahead. It's okay.
Well, I mean, we talked about the other day, like, could you last a week without having to pay for food? Honestly, you could do it just listening to Rock Chalk Sports Talk.
That's right. That's what I do. I'd quit my job because I'm not qualified to, I'm not eligible to win any of this stuff since I work here, which is a bogus rule, by the way. How bad would that be if I'm just winning everything?
Literally everything.
No, but I'll quit my job and then I'll just get free lunch. Like, that's
great plan.
I don't know how long I'd last, but I, at least on the surface, it seems like a great idea. It seems weird doing this because it's in September and because we're in Lawrence, Kansas, so it seems like it's always a good time to talk KU basketball, but for the first time, we really have some basketball news to talk about. I mean, boot camp started earlier in the week, and that's, you know, that's something. There's something there. Svi Mykhailiuk losing weight, okay, that's something to talk about. But how about the fact that we actually have some real basketball news to talk about? Because Myron Medcalf, friend of RCST, been on the show a handful of times, he posted something on ESPN.com last night. And the headline of this article is certainly an attention grabber, as it reads, Bill Self, happy with whatever after current contract ends at age 59. He said what he's said many times before, which is that he does not see himself being of the same ilk like Jim Boeheim and Mike Krzyzewski, who are coaching into their 70s, and in the case of Coach K, doesn't really show any signs of slowing down. Roy Williams, also 67 years old. Bill Self doesn't see himself like those guys. He doesn't see himself as one of those guys who's just going to coach and coach and coach until his health gives out, because that's what a lot of coaches do, right? They just coach until their health dictates that it's really not safe for them to be on the sidelines and dealing with the stress and the pressures of being a college basketball coach at the very highest of levels, which is absolutely what Bill Self's at. But he's only 54 years old. So it doesn't seem like, even if you don't think he's going to coach into his later years of life, it doesn't seem like that conversation is really pertinent right now because he's only 54. And if you met him, you wouldn't think he's that old, especially if you talk to him, because his personality is not of that somebody who is thinking that they're closer to 60 than they are to 40, which is absolutely the case. Here's what he had to say to Myron Medcalf. Quote, I've said all along that if I could go into my late 50s, that'd be good for me. Now that I'm getting close to my late 50s, I'm like, well, but my contract runs until I'm 59, so I've got 5 more years left. I definitely want to do that. Then whatever happens after that, I'd be happy with whatever. But I don't want to coach too late, end quote. We went on to kind of talk about the stress of recruiting, right? Because that's what we always talk about when guys make the jump from college to the NBA. What's the benefit? Well, you don't have to deal with recruiting, right? You're no longer a glorified babysitter making sure these guys are going to class on time and passing all their classes and not getting in trouble off the court. And it's the same thing with recruiting. You don't have to spend all of your free time going after these 15, 16, 17-year-old kids knowing that you're likely not going to land them. You know, because that's what it is. They're recruiting dozens and dozens of kids every single year knowing that best-case scenario, they get, what, 3 or 4 of them? I mean, that's got to be unbelievably taxing on your mind, on your mental state, on your physical state, flying around the country, going to games, cheesing up with the family, with the coaches, smiling, tell these kids everything they want to hear, knowing in all likelihood, I mean, the numbers suggest that you're not going to get that kid. Doesn't matter who it is, because he's probably going to go somewhere else. And that maybe you'll land a couple of them. That's got to be really, really taxing on head coaches. He said, with recruiting the way it is, it just wears you down. So, of course, Kansas fans are going to read this, and they're going to say, all right, so 5 more years, and then what? And then he's going to hang them up? And then Bill Self's going to ride off into the sunset? I don't know. You make a lot of money, you live a pretty good life, and it's all you know, right? Coaching is all Bill Self knows. It's all any of these guys know. And the question that a lot of people want to ask is, well, what's he going to do after that? You know, what's he going to do to fill his time? Well, when you make upwards of $4 or $5 million a year, the answer to that question is whatever you want. He can do whatever he wants. If he wants to get into broadcasting and make even more money, he can do that. If he wants to just ride off into the sunset and play golf every day, he can do that. Spend time with his family, sure. He can do whatever he wants. But the question that I think people are really asking is he going to find, is he going to have that hole in his life that basketball, only coaching basketball can fill? I think that's what we see with a lot of coaches. It's what we see with a lot of athletes, right? They retire and then they realize they've still got the itch. They realize that they want it back. You miss it after a while. Maybe the first year is okay. You get by having all this free time. But it's a tough adjustment trying to figure out, all right, like I don't constantly have something to do. I don't constantly have to be calling this guy or calling this kid or checking in with this coach. I can just relax. And some people, they love it and they relish in the opportunity to do what they want. But then I think some people probably miss it. They probably miss the grind. They miss that because it's all they know. And because they are uber competitor, they're just as competitive, if not more, than the kids that they're coaching up every single day because they want to be the greatest. And Bill Self went into the Hall of Fame last week, right? That's about as much vindication as any coach could ever get. Go into the Hall of Fame for the sport that you coach, and you're still at it. And by the looks of things, you could have a lot more years of great coaching in you if you choose to spend them like that. But Bill Self certainly doesn't have anything to prove, but I guarantee you one thing. I think that Bill Self really, really wants that second title. Like, really, really bad. And if he gets that, then that's to the point when I would start saying, all right, maybe the clock is ticking. But until that happens, it's just really, really hard for me to see him stepping away when he's still doing it at such a high level.
See, to me, I think that has become kind of a popular notion. Well, I think he's waiting to win his second. I don't know that that's true. Like, I
don't think he's waiting to win his second. I just think that it's something that he very, very badly wants.
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, what coach wouldn't? What coach at that high of a level wouldn't?
But it's different. It's different with Self because I think he admits to himself what I think a lot of KU fans have said is that there have been some golden opportunities in the tournament where Kansas just fell short. Just like the last 2 years, you know, falling in the Elite Eight. I think that kind of stuff probably bugs him because I think he knows this team, he knows those teams and knew what they were capable of, and I'm sure he's sitting there thinking, man, we had a really good shot. We had a really good shot, and that stings.
And I think all that's true, and I think if he wins a second title, it accelerates it. So maybe if he's 58 years old, they win a title, then maybe he does retire, or maybe he gives it another year at that point. But I don't think it's going to be something where I have to win another title before I retire. I think this is kind of like a Bob Stoops situation. I think this retirement's going to come kind of out of the blue. I don't think it'll come as late, just in the middle of the year, like what happened with Stoops. But I kind of see him going down the same path that Bob Stoops did. And if you think about it, they're kind of similar coaching careers. Won a title relatively early on with your school, and you've had a ton of success. Have had a few times where, as you mentioned, the Elite Eight games for KU, for Oklahoma, it's been times where they've either just made a BCS poll, they couldn't make the big one, or they lost in the national title game. They're pretty similar careers.
Right, they are, but I think my biggest qualm with that, and that Bob Stoops is an anomaly, right? Like, you don't expect guys to step down at that stage in your life and that stage in your career. But because it's an anomaly, I have a hard time trying to use that as a comparison for anyone, let alone Bill Self.
But does this quote, does Self saying, because he said this stuff before, oh, how he wants to retire early.
He has said this. I mean, this quote it's more telling simply because he goes into a little bit more detail, and it's more pertinent because it's recent. But Bill Self has said this more times than I can count, that he does not see himself being one of those guys who's coaching into his 70s or 80s.
And so doesn't that already make him an anomaly in a sport where the legends, the best head coaches, are all guys you think about who are in their late 60s, early 70s with Coach K, with Roy Williams, with the exception, obviously, be John Calipari. But you have Rick Pitino, you have Jim Boeheim. All these guys are older guys. So Bill Self already is an anomaly, saying that he wants to retire a little early.
Yeah, and he's Derek Johnson. I'm Nick Schwartz. This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I think what's most interesting to me about all of this, whether it's Bill Self or Bob Stoops or whoever else you want to throw into this conversation, is what a lot of us have our hard time wrapping our heads around is the why. Is the what do you want to do so badly, right? What is it after coaching that really piques your interest? And we want to know these answers really bad. I think internally, every other conversation we're having is rooted in that question. But what's, I think probably the reality is the answer is probably not as interesting as you think it is, right? Like that, oh, I just hated it. I couldn't stand recruiting. It was the worst thing ever. I never want to do it again. Like maybe we think that they're going to do a tell-all interview after they quit and then talk about all the things they hated or all the things they really missed in their personal life. Like with Urban Meyer, right? He was saying his personal life was suffering with his family. He wasn't able to be around his family as much as he wanted to. Well, Bill Self got to coach his son, right? That's pretty cool. You don't have to miss out on much family time when your son's with you every single day. And maybe that's it. Maybe it's family life. Maybe he wants to spend more time with his family. Maybe he does hate recruiting. Maybe there's something that we're going to find out about and go, oh my gosh, now it makes sense, right? That's what we were looking for. We're searching for the answer that's going to bring us to the conclusion of, oh, well, now I get it. Now I know why he quit. Now I know why he stepped down at such an early age. But the reality is it's probably not going to happen. There's probably not going to be this big revelation where we're going to go, oh, okay, now it makes sense. It's probably not that interesting of an answer. It's probably he's accomplished what he's wanted to accomplish. He's got more to life than just coaching basketball, and he wants to go see what else is out there.
And let's wrap this back to the fact that he's making so much money to where, if you were to ask anybody else, I mean, forget the glory of being the head coach of Kansas basketball. You're making $5 million a year. Hell yeah, you're retiring when you're late 50s. Are you kidding me? Get 20, 30 years of the golden years?
But that's what's so funny is that, like, I'll talk to my friends about retirement, and they're already setting up 401ks and looking at their retirement plans, and I've said this on the air. I'm so dumb with money and, like, financial stuff. I don't understand, like, anything other than, like, okay, you get a paycheck twice a week, and here's how much is going to be on it. Like, when people start asking me about W-2s and tax forms, I'm like, oh, dude, I don't know what you're talking about. But they're like, Nick, you need to figure this out. Like, you need to start planning for this stuff. And I go, name me a guy who's in radio who quits, like, before he dies in the chair, right? All those guys, if you do what you love, you can do it forever. It's not like a normal job where you're working to set yourself up for retirement. A lot of people in jobs that are very enjoyable, they work them forever. But sometimes those jobs don't pay well. Bill Self has the best of both worlds. Bill Self has a job that he loves, and it pays him very handsomely. To the point of, well, you can kind of, you're at your own disposal. You can do whatever you want. You can keep coaching forever because you love it. Or you can say, I've made a lot of money, had a lot of good times. Why don't I pack it up early? Because that's what 99% of the people in this country do. Right? They work and work and work their butt off until they can retire and then do whatever they want with the last however many years of their lives. Should we expect Bill Self to be any different because he seemingly has a job that is really, really cool and really, really fun? I don't know the answer to it. I don't think anybody does. I don't think anybody can answer that question because we don't know the stress. We don't know just how enjoyable it is. We don't know anything. We don't know any aspects of it, just what we think we know from the surface. So his contract runs through 2022. That would take him to 59. He turns 55 later this year. At what point do you think people start getting nervous when there hasn't been an extension signed, right?
Probably with 2 years left.
I think before that. I think within the next couple of years. Because we see,
sends out the alarm?
We see it with coaches all the time, right? They have 3 or 4 years left on their contract, and they'll tack on another 5 because you want to get while the getting's hot. Bill Self doesn't really have to do that, though. Maybe sometimes that's for younger coaches who are up-and-comers and kickstarters, but Bill Self doesn't really need to do that. He doesn't need to have that security because whether he wants an extension this year, next year, or in 5 years, he's going to get it, you know, and they're going to back the Brinks trucks up to keep him here. And here's the other thing. In all likelihood, if Bill Self ever does step down, KU would be in as good of a position as you could possibly be to go and get out his successor, right? Go get whoever you want because you're Kansas and that's the luxury of being at Kansas. And we kind of freak out because even at Kansas, pretty tough to find somebody who's had the level of success that Bill Self's had, right? Arguably, and I say that arguably because I do not want this to devolve into a conversation of, no, Larry Brown was better. No, Fog Allen was better. I don't care about having that conversation today. But he's arguably the greatest coach in the history of this program, which happens to be one of the top, what, 3, 4, 5 programs in the history of college basketball. So he's pretty accomplished. And I don't really think he has anything left to coach for other than the fact that I have a job I really love. So will he? I'll say this right now. I'll put my prediction out there. His contract goes through 2022. I will go ahead and predict that Bill Self is going to be coaching Kansas beyond 2022. He'll be 59 years old. You set those numbers up and seems like they're eons away. And then all of a sudden it approaches and you think, well, I said I would retire by 60, but I still like it. And I don't really have any reason to quit right now. So, all right, let's re-up. Let's go another 5 years. And then in 5 years, and I told myself I wouldn't coach in my 70s, and I'm 65, but I mean, still coaching at a high level. All right, let's do another 5 years. I don't know how long he's going to coach here, but do I think Bill Self will be here when he's 60 years old? I do. It's 321 on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Up next, let's switch gears, talk some football with Benton Smith of the Lawrence Journal-World. All right, it's 325 here on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. I am Nick Schwert with Derek Johnson. Appreciate you hanging out with us. Let's welcome on Benton Smith of the Lawrence Journal-World back onto the program. Benton, I'm sure after the loss last week, you were getting tweets, as I'm sure many people who cover the team were, asking about what's going on with this team, why aren't they able to beat MAC opponents, losing twice in a row quite convincingly. And it seems as though the fan base is growing increasingly frustrated and, dare I say, impatient with what David Beatty and this coaching staff is trying to build. What's your, I guess, first response when people are coming at you with stuff like that?
Well, I think the biggest concern for most people is just the way that the secondary is just surrendering chunks and chunks of yardage. And, you know, receivers are kind of running free and, you know, not even doing anything really spectacular to make big plays happen, but they keep happening time and time again. And I think that it's just the KU fan base who last year saw the defense really end up being the strength of the team were thinking, all right, we still have a lot of stars basically from that team coming back on defense at least. And maybe if we can experience not too much drop off, we should be an improved team. But you've actually seen a massive drop off in the defense's effectiveness this year, while the offense has taken, I think, a pretty big step forward. And I think just the overall frustration of, you know, KU just can never seem to have the offense and defense clicking at the same time in the same season. I think that kind of just, and fans have seen it one way or the other for so long. Either the defense stinks or, you know, normally, let's be honest, the offense has stunk for years before this year. And I think it just kind of wears on people. So I get it.
Yeah, and I do too. And I also, but I think you have to understand not just that the defense is failing, but why it's failing. You see the youth in that secondary. So how much, I guess, is the onus on those stars up front who we've come to expect so much from to kind of pick up the slack? Or are they already doing it? It's just not showing in the box score.
Yeah, I think you can only ask Daniel Wise and Dorrance Armstrong to be so superhuman in what they're doing, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, like David Beatty said a couple of days ago, like his 88-year-old mother, you know, is on the phone with him and she says, you know, they're going to double team Dorrance, right? So everybody knows that Dorrance Armstrong is kind of an unstoppable guy on that defensive end and is massive and is agile and as strong as Daniel Wise is, too. I mean, at this point, opposing teams are just game planning to take those guys away and saying, all right, other nine guys, prove that you can beat us. And that hasn't been the case. And a lot of that is because of the young secondary. You know, Mike Lee, obviously, is just a sophomore, and he doesn't have Fish Smithson back there anymore. And Bryce Tornaden is a sophomore. And even Shaq Taylor, a junior who, you know, started off at a smaller FCS program and then played JUCO 1 year, and Hassan Defense, who played 1 year of JUCO, all those guys are young. And when you talk to Clint Bowen, the thing that he keeps going back to is just, like, he preaches and preaches, you have to be technique sound. But once those guys are getting out in the game and, you know, something goes a little bit haywire, and it might just be a guy making an unexpected cut as they're trying to defend them. Once that breaks down, guys aren't sticking to their techniques, and then that's where all the breakdowns are coming. So the young secondary has really been an issue for the KU defense.
And there was a lot of talk about Hassan Defense in the offseason, how good he had looked during the summer. Obviously, Mike Lee, a freshman All-American last year, and David Beatty spent a lot of time talking up Bryce Tornaden and saying, you know, that's the kind of guy who he wants in the program. So we know there's youth there, and with youth comes inconsistencies and varying results. But I guess, how much room for growth do you think there is this season? Like, how optimistic are you that they can pick it up, even if it's just incremental, that we will see some improvements in the secondary by season's end?
I think that if these guys stay healthy and, you know, they just are seeing these tests week after week, I mean, they're going to get better just by being out there. And now, I don't think that it's going to happen overnight. So it's going to be difficult for KU fans to watch at times. And as far as the Big 12 schedule goes, I don't know if there could be a much worse team coming into Memorial Stadium at this point. I mean, obviously, other than Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, but I mean, West Virginia you put right up there in terms of just the variety of skill guys that they have, running backs, athletes outside at receiver, guys in the slot, you know, and then they have a quarterback who really does throw the ball downfield and has success doing so. So, I mean, this is just like, I think, one of the last teams that KU wanted to see, given where the defense is at this point.
We got Benton Smith of the Lawrence Journal World here with us on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. Now, you talk about the offense being, you know, obviously improved than what we've seen over the last couple of years, but it still does seem like they've got room for improvement, too, just in terms of taking care of the ball and finishing drives. Are you optimistic that we're going to see them even take it to another level this year?
I think so. I think there'll be steady progress with this too. I think the more that Doug Meacham kind of gets familiar with the personnel, and, you know, also once there's some stability on the offensive line, we saw them make some pretty big changes this week with Jason Rhodes, I guess, was a bit banged up leading up to that game at Ohio, and Andrew Tovey came and pretty much won that job at left guard, just a big, strong sophomore, and they really liked what they saw out of him. And Zach Cannon, graduate transfer from Nebraska, you know, played most of the game at right tackle instead of sophomore Antoine Frazier. And, you know, the way Doug Meacham explained it is basically KU had two really young guys on that right side with Chris Hughes and Antoine Frazier. And when you're that young on one side of the ball, that can get pretty glaring as far as the weaknesses showing up. So there's a little bit more stability there. So I think that's one positive, if you're looking for something to take away from that Ohio loss, is maybe KU is starting to figure out what its O-line should look like moving forward. And then obviously Khalil Herbert had a massive day, going for 137 yards and a couple of touchdowns. And I mean, basically he was a no-show the first couple of weeks. And from what I understand, it's because they hadn't really seen what they wanted to out of Herbert in practices. So he'd kind of fallen out of favor. You know, they wanted to use Taylor Martin. He ended up getting injured. Dom Williams comes in the second week and has a pretty effective game as a true freshman. So I think they liked Taylor Martin and Dom Williams a little bit more than Khalil, but then Herbert goes out and proves he can do it. So I think that there's skilled players there to make plays. And I mean, we haven't even talked about the receivers that Peyton Bender has to throw to. And if Steven Sims is healthy, that's a pretty good starting point for your offense.
And you mentioned the offensive line and the youth there, and then you look at the youth in the secondary, and I don't know what you were kind of expecting coming into the season, but I thought this could be a three or four win team just based off, mm-hmm. I guess, the hype train, especially with that defensive front and Doug Meacham coming in.
But looking back on it, and when you really do break down that two deep and see all of the sophomores on there, the guys that David Beatty recruited who are part of his recruiting classes, and I kind of feel silly looking back on it thinking that we could expect these sophomores and these guys who have only been playing for 1 or 2 years to lead this team through a successful season according to expectations. Because, I mean, we look at Hakeem Adeniji as like one of the leaders of that offensive line. He's a true sophomore. Like, same with Mesa Riberty, a true sophomore at center, and those are two of your best players. When you look at that and realize that if there is any experience on this team, it's guys who were left over from the Charlie Weiss era, and we know how bare the cupboards were when Beatty inherited it. I feel silly looking back on it and not maybe giving more credence to just how young and inexperienced this team was going to be.
Yeah, and I think you can only kind of base some of your judgment off of those things from what you're hearing from coaches, because obviously we're not out at practices more than, you know, maybe 15 minutes at a time, and we're not really seeing anything like real competitive when we are in there. So when you hear coaches kind of talk about how much they like Hassan defense and Shaq Taylor and Bryce Tornaden's progression and Mike Lee, and obviously we know a little bit more about Mike Lee because we've seen him play for about a year now. But, I mean, you just kind of have to base your judgment of where the team's at off of those conversations. You know, you talk to players, you talk to receivers, you talk to assistants. And I think that they were positive, as they should be, about their personnel, but we didn't find out until the season actually started that just those young guys in the secondary really aren't yet where they need to be in order for KU to have an effective defense. So, yeah, I mean, I'm on the same boat with you. You know, before the season started, I thought, you know, this team could really show some progress and finish the season 4-8, something like that. And, I mean, I didn't think they'd win more than four games, but, you know, four games is seeming like, I don't know where those are coming at this point, because we got 9 games left and you're off to a 1-2 start and the Big 12 is serious.
Yeah, 4 games is going to be pretty tough after starting 1-2. But I do think that because of the way they can move the ball offensively and the weapons they have there, I think there's just going to be maybe 2 or 3 games down the stretch where the offense is able to take care of the ball. And I don't think the defense is ever going to be a shutdown defense, but I think they do have some playmakers there that can make some stuff happen, get a few turnovers, get some big plays on defense. I'm not going into Big 12 play, I guess, expecting it to be a bunch of lopsided victories for the opponent. Like, I think there are still going to be opportunities for KU to be in games because I do think they have enough horses. I'm just not sure that they're ever going to really put everything together for a sustainable product over the course of the season, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, it's just so difficult to kind of get everything clicking as when you're rebuilding on the fly sometimes with some of these positions. And I think you're right. I think there will be some close games. And for the KU fan base, I mean, if I probably wouldn't check out of the season necessarily if I was a fan, because to me, it'd be interesting to see how this team kind of makes that progress over these 9 Big 12 games, because, you know, pretty much the entire team is going to be back next year. And then you're talking about next year maybe having something interesting to watch and maybe seeing a lot more competitive games. So to me, that the whole process is kind of get started in a way these next few weeks, you know. And I mean, I don't think, obviously this team isn't going to any bowl this year or anything like that, but if you can stomach, you know, watching some of the rough games like against West Virginia and Oklahoma and Oklahoma State, I think you'll probably feel a little bit better in some of those other games against, you know, the Baylors of the world.
He's Benton Smith. I'm Nick Schwartz. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN. You said that maybe not a worse opponent to come into Memorial Stadium than West Virginia. So do you see this as a pretty bad matchup for KU?
I do. I mean, just because of the secondary issues that we've seen in the last couple of weeks, you know, KU was playing against a couple of MAC teams and, you know, nothing against those guys that put up numbers against Kansas from Ohio and Central Michigan. But, you know, the talent level for those skill players is nowhere near what it'll be this week with West Virginia. I mean, West Virginia's got everything you want in an offense. And I mean, a lot of those guys watching the film just have to be pretty excited about what they can do this week on the road to open Big 12 play, you know. And I mean, there's been so many just kind of gaping spaces in the secondary. So if you're a receiver or if you're Will Grier, I mean, you're just like, all right, let's go put up some numbers.
And I know Dorrance Armstrong kind of talked about it earlier this week, and I know you wrote about it for the LJ World and KU Sports, but he's obviously aware of the fact that he hasn't put up numbers this year and wants to change that. When do you think that happens? I mean, it seems like it's only a matter of time before he starts getting after the quarterback, because as much as we can say, well, they're double-teaming him and they know who he is now and they're game-planning for him, they knew who he was last year, and he was still mm-hmm. able to kind of get through that, because that's what you expect from a guy who's tabbed as the Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year in the preseason. So I'm assuming it's only a matter of time before he starts putting up some numbers and getting after the QB.
I think so, too. I mean, there's no bigger talent on this roster than Dorrance Armstrong, and he's also, like, one of the more humble guys on the team, yeah. honestly. I mm-hmm. mean, he's just professional in his approach, and, I mean, he just gets after it, and he doesn't, you know, get down on himself or his team when it would be easy to do so, and he's just so massive and so fast, and, I mean, like you said, it's just a matter of time. I wouldn't be shocked at all, you know, we're talking a week from now, and he had a couple of sacks against West Virginia.
A game prediction? Can KU, you think, even keep this one close?
What's the spread on it? 22.5,
yeah,
something like that?
That's the last I saw.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly, just based on the breakdowns that we've seen in the secondary, I just don't know how this one's close. I mean, it would take, you know, basically a night and day turnaround from the guys in KU's secondary just, you know, making picks and making the kind of stops that we've not yet seen them prove that they can do. So I'm honestly expecting West Virginia to win pretty easily. I know KU fans probably don't want to hear that, but that's kind of my thought.
Well, maybe, I mean, I said this kind of jokingly over the weekend, like, I kind of almost feel responsible because I was somebody who was leading the hype train going into this year. And now when you fall short of expectations, when the hype is so high, it makes it seem worse than it really is, to whereas if mm-hmm. perhaps I was a little bit more realistic about what was in store for this season, then maybe the disappointment level wouldn't be as high.
Yeah, I can see that. But, I mean, also, that kind of tells you about the state of the program at this point. You know, we're year three of David Beatty, and it sounds like me and you both thought, well, maybe this team can win four games. And, you know, that was considered hype, or it looks like hype at this point. So, I mean, I guess it just depends on your perspective. But I don't think that – I think fans – like we talked about at the beginning of this conversation, I think they just have been worn out by year after year after year of, you know, finishing last in the Big 12 and not being competitive. So I think that there will be some good things, some good days ahead, but I just don't know that Saturday is going to be one of those days with West Virginia coming in.
He's Benton Smith. You can check out all of his work in the LJ World and at KUSports.com. Always a pleasure. Thanks for joining me again, man.
Thanks for having me, Nick.
All right, that's Benton Smith. I'm Nick Schwert. It's Rock Chalk Sports Talk on the new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
441 here, new FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Derek Johnson here. I'll have you covered for the rest of the show as Nick Schwert out a little bit early to go get things set up at Set 'Em Up Jacks. He'll be on High School Sports Weekly tonight with David Lawrence from 6 to 7. At this time, we'd like to welcome on John Costco of Pro Football Focus to the show as he joins us every Thursday here at 440 on Rock Chalk Sports Talk to help talk KU football. It wasn't the best week of play for KU. Obviously, you go into Ohio, and the hope was a little bit down after the Central Michigan game, but seemed to be, among some fans, completely crushed after that game to Ohio. So what were the biggest takeaways for you in that game where KU loses to Ohio 42-30?
Yeah, I mean, it's just the defense isn't playing up to what we expected them to play this year. You know, you look at that defensive line, which is supposed to be the strength of the defense, they're really not getting after the quarterback and pressuring the quarterback like we, you know, like I was expecting. I don't know who else was really expecting them to do that. But, I mean, Dorrance Armstrong was a preseason defensive Big 12 player of the year. So you're expecting him to get after quarterback. He didn't get a single pressure on the quarterback this weekend. He only has six on the year. He had two hits and two hurries in that first game. But since then, he's just got an additional two hurries. And so I think that's the biggest takeaway for me is that, you know, an Ohio team that, it's a decent, good MAC team, but, you know, Kansas is a Big 12 team. They should be able to go in there and at least hold their own, make it a competitive game. And it really wasn't, you know, Kansas had their moments, but for the most part, you know, Ohio was able to do what they wanted to do.
You brought up how the D-line hasn't forced as much pressure as we would have thought in the preseason. I mean, how much of that is just a result of the defensive backs struggling? You talked about how in week two, Central Michigan with Shane Morris, he was releasing the ball at a ridiculous rate. So it was almost like, well, I don't really have time to even touch the quarterback anyway. How much of that was the case in the game against Ohio?
Well, you know, you're going to have some of that. Obviously, in those quick passes, they're going to be able to get rid of the ball pretty quickly, and not, obviously you're not going to get rid of the get pressure on the quarterback. But at the same time, he wasn't getting rid of the ball in under 2 seconds like Shane Morris was. There was plenty of time for them to get pressure after the quarterback. And it's not you look at this past week and what they were able to get. They're doing it in 2.5 seconds, so it's not like it was ridiculously quick. I mean, that's a decently quick passing game, but it's not anything like they saw the week prior. So some of it is the defensive backs not being able to cover very well, but at the same time, you know, you've got two guys in Daniel Wise and Dorrance Armstrong that really should be getting after the quarterback and finishing at the quarterback. I think Daniel Wise was fine getting interior pressure, but he's not finishing at the quarterback. He had four pressures in this game, but you want to see more from these guys. And yeah, obviously they're not being helped by the secondary, but still at the same time, there's plenty of plays, there's plenty of dropbacks that they're sitting back there for longer than 2.5 seconds.
We're talking with John Costco of Pro Football Focus here on New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. Would they just be better off pressing and playing bump and run, man-to-man, and kind of affecting some of those short and intermediate routes to where, hey, we're going to get burned deep a little bit more, but I mean, at this point, they're already getting burned all over the field anyway, so might as well play some risk and reward and give that D-line a little more time to go pressure the quarterback. Would they be better off playing that sort of a system?
You know, it's difficult to say. I think that they, you know, mixing it up would be beneficial and showing different looks to the quarterback so that he's not, you know, disrupting his line of sight, maybe, you know, throwing in their more fire zones type schemes, and so you're dropping defensive linemen into some, you know, that quick passing lanes. That would help too. But yeah, I mean, if you're going to press, you have to be able to trust that player to be able to run with the wide receiver, because if you miss on the press, then you're getting beat, you know, for a big gain. And I understand the reasoning why you don't do it very often is because of that. And sure, they are getting beat deep, you know, on occasion. It was only on, you know, they had the one pass deep right where they gave up 58 yards, and another deep middle, it was 24 yards. But really, they're not getting beat that often deep, so maybe pressing them would be beneficial for them. But at the same time, you would start getting beat deep if the defensive back can't run with the wide receiver.
So you talked about how they've at least been solid enough, I guess, against the deep ball. Has there been any other bright spots for that defensive secondary? Any either players or like a type of play that they've been able to snuff out pretty well?
I mean, not really. I mean, across the board, the defensive backs have been pretty struggled. They really have. It doesn't matter if it's in what type of scheme they're in. If they're blitzing, when they blitz, they're giving up big plays, or they're just giving up plays. So the fact that matters is that I don't know. I mean, Mike Lee is playing better after that first game where he struggled a little bit. So there's a bright spot there. But for the rest of the secondary, it's actually pretty difficult to find any bright spots. I mean, you got Taylor who's playing decently well, but in terms of, you know, moving forward, you know, you look at what they were able to do in non-conference play. You know, it's against the Big 12 passing attacks. It's going to be a big concern, and they really need to step up pretty quickly. And I don't see where the improvement's coming from right now.
Speaking of those Big 12 passing games, they've got one this week with West Virginia and a pretty highly touted quarterback in Will Grier coming in with some very fast wide receivers on the outside. How on earth do they try to hold down this West Virginia offense?
I have no idea, because they've looked incredibly good on offense so far this year. Not like there's only been one player on the offensive line that's looking bad, and that's Matt Jones. But the rest of the offensive line is like been incredibly solid as a unit. Matt Jones is the center, so at least you know in interior pressure you might get some more stuff from Daniel Wise. But you know they've got one of the best offensive lines so far outside of him. And then, yeah, Will Grier is playing at an extremely high level right now. He's one of the highest-graded quarterbacks in the nation. Obviously not as good as like, guys like Baker Mayfield or Mason Rudolph, but, I mean, he's playing at a high level with you know, with a new team for him coming from Florida. So it's going to be difficult. I don't – you know, they have really good wide receivers. They've got a very good backfield. You know, they've got – doesn't matter who they really put back there, Justin Crawford or Kennedy McCoy. All these guys are playing well for them right now. So I don't know how they're going to be able to do it. If Daniel Wise can get a lot of pressure up the middle and Dorrance Armstrong can finally get into his own, that would help a lot with that secondary if they can get that pressure on the quarterback, because every quarterback is going to struggle when they get under pressure. Even Will Grier, he's only been pressured on like 20% of his dropbacks this year, but when he is pressured, he is getting a pass rating of just 44.4, which is obviously really bad. So if he can get after him, that would be the way to disrupt that offense, but it's not very many teams have been able to do that.
We're talking with John Costco of Pro Football Focus here on New FM 101.7 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. I'm Derek Johnson. One guy we haven't talked about had probably his worst game of the season, played astoundingly well in the first 2 weeks, but Joe Dineen didn't have quite as good of a game in week 3 against Ohio. What were some of his struggles in that game against the Bobcats, and are you confident that he can bounce back in week 4?
He was missing a lot of tackles. He missed 5 tackles in that game, which is obviously a really high number. So he had just 9 tackles, and then had another those 5 misses. So you're looking at a missed tackle rate of his tackles of over 50%. So that was where most of his struggles were. He was over-pursuing on some angles and not breaking down, wasn't able to get off blocks if he had been. So, it's a one-game thing, and he had shown he's shown improvement. I think that if he just has to play with a little bit more discipline. He may have been trying to do too much to overcompensate for the defense struggling at the time. So, I'm not concerned with his play yet. Even with the 5 missed tackles, he didn't grade out terribly bad. It was not great, though.
Speaking of Joe Dineen, you look at the other linebackers on this KU team, and not quite talked about as much, and part of it just for the pure factor of KU's spread out, and sometimes they don't play another linebacker. But has anybody else emerged next to Joe Dineen?
Nobody's really emerged next to him. Keith Lonaker has been their starter at that position. He's graded at right around average. He hasn't done anything bad per se, but he hasn't really shown anything that would stand out. So he's been fine playing next to him. He just hasn't. I guess you just don't notice him very often because he doesn't make a lot of plays on the ball. But he's also not putting himself out of position either. So he's doing essentially what his job, but he's just not making many plays on the ball. He only has 6 tackles on the year and 3 defensive stops. So, he's just not showing out.
Let's move over to the offense. I'm Derek Johnson with John Costco, Pro Football Focus on New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. They got some late garbage time points and yards in that game against Ohio, but I would say overall they've looked like probably David Beatty's best offense here in his regime at Kansas. What have been some of your biggest thoughts with the offense so far?
Yeah, I would agree with you there. They definitely do look more legitimate as an offense in Beatty's third year. So Peyton Bender seems to be – he runs the offense decently well. There will be times where he struggles to know what to do with the ball. You saw he took a really bad sack on that I know on Twitter everybody was tweeting, was like, what's going on? That was definitely on him. He needs to get rid of the ball. The offensive linemen, they're designed to cut so he can get rid of the ball quickly. He just didn't do that. But he showed a lot. He showed better in this game in terms of being able to throw the deep ball. He connected on four of his 10, which is better than he had been doing. And that's an improvement for him. He was better under pressure when he was throwing the ball. He had a pass rating of 109.5. So, if you remember in the previous two games, it was almost at a 0.0, and those two games combined. So the fact that he showed improvement in those areas is a good thing. And the one thing that this offense isn't looking as good as it did last year was the running game. They're really missing Keon Kinner as a guy who could really create his own. I know that the offensive line, I know that Khalil Herbert did gain 137 yards and had the two touchdowns, but at the same time, that was all that was be able to. He was creating a lot of that on his own, but the offensive line was helping create some holes. So in terms of, they're just not. I know when you look at 137 yards, you think that's a really good game. A lot of that is scheme wise. So in terms of what Beatty's calling against, what the defense is showing, that's improving. In terms of what the players are doing, they don't seem to be meshing quite well together just yet. Herbert had a good game, but the offensive line didn't. Previous week, it was the offensive line not having a good game, or the running backs weren't having a good game. So in terms of them matching up, in terms of the running game, working together as a unit, it's not quite there yet, but the passing game has shown the improvement, which you'd want to see.
And speaking of that passing game, obviously KU's pretty deep. It might be their deepest position at wide receiver, but they seem to just go up leaps and bounds when Steven Sims is in the game. Seem to be a totally different offense with Steven Sims in there. How important is he to this offense?
He's their best receiver, so he's very important. That is a guy that, he can create his own yards. He can create a lot of good separation. He has sure hands. He can make players miss in when he gets the ball in his hand. So he's a guy that makes everybody else around him. He causes the defense to, concentrate on him, roll coverages towards his side, maybe even double cover him over there. So it frees up the other receivers to be in one-on-one situations. So if he can stay healthy, it does improve the rest of the unit. Quan Hampton is a guy that has shown me a lot. His quick feet, and he can do some good things with the ball in his hand. So what Sims is able to do for the rest of the unit is very important for the team.
How did the offensive line grade out in that game against Ohio? It seemed like the right side was struggling, but then they bring on Zach Cannon and Andrew Tovey. Do they make a difference at all for this offensive line? And how did guys like Akeem Adeniji do?
So Akeem Adeniji was pretty good. He's showing a lot better than he did last year, and so he's playing well this year. He did give up a hurry, but that was it. And so he hasn't given up very much in terms of pressure. He hasn't given up a sack this year. And you're right, the right side of that line did struggle, and then when they brought in Zach Cannon, he played a lot better lockdown on his side of the line of scrimmage. So you're right, when they were at that right side of the line, gave up a total of 3 sacks and 5 hurries. He came in there and didn't give up anything. So what he was able to do is really solidify the line, and perhaps moving forward it will be better for that right side of the line.
We're talking with John Costco of Pro Football Focus here on New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk. So we go into this game, week 4, the opener of the Big 12 season for Kansas. What are some matchups that KU can exploit versus West Virginia? Give some hope to the fans who are still wanting to go to these football games.
Yeah, so, what's going to be good for KU is that, the offensive line has shown improvement from a year ago. And their defensive line of West Virginia is not that good. They don't have the pieces that they did last year. None of their guys are grading out very well. Where all their good players are in the secondary, and they just have one good linebacker. So if they can run the ball on this team, they'll be able to continue to move their offense. It'd be a good year, a good week for them to get fully gelled on the running attack. And then Peyton Bender, he looked better last week in terms of throwing it downfield. So if a healthy Steven Sims, I know Booker's looking solid, Quan Hampton's looking solid. and Chase Harrell, you know, he's a guy with a very good large catch radius. Those are some things that you could look to see. I don't think they're gonna win this game. I don't think that's it's in the cards unless they, you know, catch fire with the running game and are able to get pressure on Will Grier. But this is, I think, it in terms of how Kansas's team matches up, an improving run game, or, you know, run blocking unit of that offensive line, they can do some damage to that defense.
All right, he's John Costco of Pro Football Focus. Thanks so much for joining us, man.
As always.
All right, once again, John Costco of Pro Football Focus. We'll be back on the other side, the top of the 5 o'clock hour, to talk some more KU football. Let you listen to some audio from David Beatty. That coming up next. New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk.
This is Rock Chalk Sports Talk with Nick Schwert on New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN.
A little over half an hour left in the show. In case you missed it, we'll let you re-listen to the conversation had with Benton Smith of the Lawrence Journal World coming up on the other side. But first, I have a message for you fans who are upset with this team's success. I have no problem with being upset, no problem with being disappointed with this success. But don't give up on this team, because you as a fan base have a hand in KU's success. It may not be a big portion of it, and I get being disappointed with the start, losing to two MAC schools in Central Michigan and Ohio, to where you would have at least liked a 2-1 start. And at some point, you realize that as a Big 12 school, you need to be beating those MAC schools. I get it. I get the disappointment. But it's one thing to be upset and complain, which is fine. But it's another to sit back and not be willing to do anything about it. So go to the games. Support this team. Go out to the game on Saturday against West Virginia. I saw tickets online for $6. And here's why you need to go to these games. If you want Kansas to get better as a team and as a program on the football field, you as a fan do have a part in it. Whether you believe it or not, you do. It may not be the most important part. It may not have a huge presence on how this team does or how this program goes. But you definitively have a part in making this team better. If recruits are watching KU football on TV, or if recruits are attending whatever week's game, and they see full stands, even for bad teams, that shows a ton of loyalty. And I guarantee that these high school recruits absolutely care about loyalty and would love that. And beyond that, if they don't care about loyalty, good players want to play in packed stadiums. They want to see the school loves their football team, and they want to play in front of a sold-out crowd. They want, when they score a touchdown, it to get loud and to see everybody waving the wheat in the end zone, as opposed to, oh, look, there's 10 people waving the wheat, and then there's a hole where there's just empty seats. So you have, as a fan, a very real hand in this. Don't just sit back and be like, yeah, we're not doing too well. I can't support this team. I don't want to watch them anymore. They're working on getting better. They're putting in work every day. 2 to 3 hours of practice, however much time they spend in the film room or in the weight room. They're working hard every day to get better. They're putting in work every day. And what are some fans doing? Just sitting there and complaining about it? And again, I get it, but you literally can help change things by going to the games. And you can get disgusted at certain plays. You can get upset about some play calls. You can get mad over whether this guy should have caught that ball or should have covered this guy better. That's fine. But go to the games. Support the team. Be there. As I said, there are tickets online for $6 right now. Don't tell me it's too expensive. Don't tell me that, oh, you know what, it's Saturday, I got better things to do. Sure, maybe you do. But it's $6. It's not going to burn a hole in your pocket to go to one of these games. And if you actually do care about the state of this program and you care about how well off they can be and how improved they can be, you have a hand in it. Again, it is 100% okay to be upset or disappointed in the start. I don't want to confuse these things. That means you care. If you're upset or disappointed right now, that's great. That means you had high expectations for this team. Not necessarily high, but you had higher expectations. And that means you're upset because you care. Nothing wrong with that. And that means you want good things for this program. That's a great thing. You have a right to complain and be upset too. You have a right to voice your opinion. But don't moan and complain if you're not willing to do your part in it. Go to these games. Do your part. Help the program. They're cheap. They're fun. For a family or tailgating, and who knows. Maybe they'll pull off an upset or keep it close and entertain you. At the very least, put in some effort because they are putting in, the coaches, the players, a countless amount of effort. And at the very least, you'd fill the stands and help the team with recruits or boost the current team's morale. So although you, the fans, are not the primary reason for this team's future success, you are part of it. I'm not saying not to be upset or not to be mad about this or that, but let's say KU football was your child. If your child did something bad, yeah, you would be mad at them. But you wouldn't just say, I give up on you. I'm not watching you anymore. You'd be mad, and you would do what you could to try to help your kid. But at the end of the day, you can only go so far doing your part, right? So go as far as you can here. Do your part. Go to the game and help this program. One guy I know who will be attending the game, Benton Smith of the Lawrence Journal World. In case you missed his conversation with Nick Schwert earlier in the show, we'll let you hear his interview talking KU football. Coming up on the other side, I'm Derek Johnson. You're listening to New FM 101.7 and 1320 KLWN's Rock Chalk Sports Talk.